Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSHD Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSHD Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of people affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSHD Society Radio. Welcome all to the FSHD Society Radio Show. We are live on Facebook and so glad you can join us. You want to get in touch with the show? This is how you can do that. You can email. That is the FSHD Radio at FSHDSociety.org. You can also visit the site. Please do that. You're already here on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, all those social media outlets to learn more about FSHD Society. You want to find past shows. They're all available. And I know that they're starting to amp up that, call it advertisement, marketing of the podcast. It is all available. I think this is episode 53. If you're following along in the podcast world, you can find all those past episodes all the way back to episode one with Jun Kinoshita. That was an awesome episode where it all began, on Google Podcasts and Spotify and all those other platforms. Where you find podcasts, you should be able to find FSHD Society Radio Show. Except I think Apple is still the glitch. For some reason, we're having issues there. Anyhow, I digress. Today, we are talking about a little bit of the mental side, mental health of FSHD. Each week, you know, or I'm sorry, each month, we try to have these themed episodes. This one happens to be about the mental side. Next week, we'll have a little bit of talk of the physical. And today's guest is going to be somebody that we have not talked to prior, so I'm excited for that aspect of it. And mental health, to me, is what is really important because that's the issue I struggle with, keeping my mental health in a positive way without being false positive and dealing with the things of FSHD in my life. So I'm always keyed in on this one. However, the physical side can also be fun. That'll be Mitch and Bill next week as we work through exercises and things of that nature. So if you have questions for the physical side, maybe hold those off for next week. But if you want to chime in on this show when we discuss mental health, you can either email, as I mentioned, or on the Facebook chat room. Please do that. I had a great message from my cousin, actually, looking to donate still to the FSHD Society Radiothon campaign that we had just over a week ago. I believe that's expired now, but we do have a great campaign still out there, and that is about the year-end campaign. Despite events beyond our control, the plans and the momentum that we need to create this year going into next is still very important, right? Time equals lives. We talked about that on the Radiothon. We're still talking about it now because that is the theme. You can find that throughout all of the FSHDSociety.org's website. So if you can give, that would be amazing. Give by December 31st, 2020, and give your gift, and it will be matched up to $500,000. That's double your impact. So think of that. Share, spread the news to all your friends. That's how we're going to fight this thing. 2025 is not that far away. That is our goal, and we can reach that together. I am positive of it. I'm positive of it. So in these crazy times, we deal with mental health. We deal with trying to cope and work through the mental side and mental health side of FSHD. So we're going to bring in a guest, I think, that can kind of give us some more tools in our toolbox, so to speak, to help us deal with these things throughout our life. Her name is Missy Dixon, and we welcome her on the show now. Hi, Missy.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
I'm doing great. Did you do that on purpose? Did you give me a hesitation like that on purpose?
No.
Are you checking my mental health?
Error.
Oh, okay. I was like, man, yeah, she's putting me to the test.
Thanks for having me today.
That's always the most stressful part, honestly. Well, outside of making sure all the computer stuff turns on when I'm ready to start this, but when I when I have the guests, I go, "You're on." And it's dead air for a little bit. I'm like, oh no, we lost them.
Oh no, sorry. I didn't mean to cause any extra worry or stress.
Okay, good, good. I'm like, that would be very ironic. No,
that would be and mean.
Yeah. Well, we're starting on a fun first step here. That is good because I really wanted to to not get super heavy and doldrum and, you know, the blues kind of feeling. I want people to be positive when we talk about this subject as best as they can, even though I know it is difficult. But before we travel down the road of all the great tools I think you can help us kind of use or even teach us a little bit today or talk to us about today, tell us a little bit about your background for those that don't know much about Missy.
Sure. So I am a visiting assistant professor of at the University of Utah. I'm in the divisions of neurology and psychiatry and behavioral health. And I mostly do research working with individuals, adults, and children who have neuromuscular diseases, particularly congenital myotonic dystrophy and other forms of myotonic dystrophy, Duchenne muscular dystrophy, and of course, FSHD. And so, yeah, I do research, and then I also work in the clinic and see individuals in our behavioral health clinic. And a lot of my individual clients have neuromuscular disorders and have some sort of psychiatric comorbidity associated with that, their neuromuscular disorder. And then I also see other children mostly who have some sort of chronic condition and a mental health component related to their chronic condition.
What kind of pulled you in the direction, if you can recall, of, you know, this side, I guess, of mental health, you know, dealing with these kinds of issues with Duchenne's and FSHD and those types of disorders?
Sure. So I can give you an abbreviated version or the really long-winded version of this. So I'll try and go somewhere towards the abbreviated version. I have worked in research in different roles in research, genetic research, in particular for the past 25 years. And during that time, I attended grad school and became very interested in the psychological side of living with chronic conditions. And I had been working with a geneticist who was studying neuromuscular disorders long ago, and then with the individual geneticists and neurologists that came to study in his lab, some of them being Kevin Flanagan and Russ Butterfield. And so just through my associations there, working in research and my background in psychology, it just kind of pulled me right in. And I've been working with Dr. Butterfield in doing neuromuscular research for the last 10 years. And so kind of really looking at the psychological side of living with a chronic neuromuscular condition has kind of come to the forefront. I mean, certainly it was something I was always interested in, but it now seems to be, I don't want to say taken more seriously, but it's more prevalent on other people's minds as we are now recognizing, you know, that the behavioral health and our mental health are equally as important as our physical health, and that they do interact.
So do you feel that in the past, maybe this has been kind of an afterthought, you know, dealing with the mental health side of it?
I in terms of research, certainly it's been not as well studied. And I think just in general terms, I think, you know, mental health in general is becoming, it's becoming more accepted to say, hey, I'm struggling with this and, you know, and I want to get help for it. So I think, you know, just our acceptance of mental health and therapy or attending therapy or seeking help, I think it has become, you know, it's become more widely accepted throughout our culture. So I don't know that I would say it wasn't like looked at purposely. I think we're just becoming more accepted. And I think also, as you know, in the past, families used to take care of this together, you know, and they all lived near each other and they could relate and rely on each other, or within their community, whether that be a religious community or a school community or however, you know, they found community. And now, at least in our country, you know, we live so spread out from where we may have grown up and we've moved away. And so finding different places and different communities, I think, has kind of forced individuals to reach out for help in different ways.
Yeah, I think that you're right. I think it's a little more comfortably talked about when it comes to mental health, even in terms of like meditation and those things that maybe, you know, when I was younger, you know, teenage years, 20s, definitely, maybe even as not long ago as even maybe 20 years ago, if you talk about mental health or meditation or something like that, you kind of get scoffed at. Like, what is that? Like, are you crazy? Are you okay? You
know? Exactly.
And then there would be like a sign of weakness
indeed,
or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Right. And now, you know, certainly there's still that camp who thinks and feels that way, but it's not nearly as large as it used to be. And we're recognizing that our mental health is very important to our well-being, to our relationship, to our physical well-being, to our jobs. So I think there's a lot more emphasis on staying healthy and having good mental health nowadays than there was, you're right, 20 years ago.
Yeah. I heard you.
On a personal note, I could say when I told my parents I was going to study psychology, my father was not a believer. So
No.
He thought it was psycho mumbo jumbo.
Yes. I've heard that term. Yes, I've heard that term. Yep.
Yeah.
I think my my brother does some counseling. He's a social worker, and he's done some of that work, like group therapy and family therapies of different kinds. And same thing. I think my parents might sometimes have told him, "Oh, just deal with it, just cope," you know. And he would just nod his head like, "No, this is really important. I really want to help people this way." So I understand the passion.
Right.
Yes, I understand that. You use this term that I heard you speak of, psychosocial. Can you explain kind of what that means, and is there, you know, and then kind of maybe how it relates to having, you know, the chronic neuromuscular conditions that we have?
Sure. So really, it's kind of this combination of, our internal kind of thoughts and feelings that we have, and how they interact, and the impact that our outward social environment has on our internal well-being, if you will. I think is a simplified way of saying it. So, you know, if we were to think about doing like a psychosocial assessment, we would, you know, look into, you know, how mentally fit you are, you know, what are the problems or things that you're experiencing mental health wise. Are they, you know, are they biological? Are they related to your social environment, or, you know, certain things in your social environment that maybe are lacking, if you will. So You know, are you feeling depressed because you're not working, and because you're not working, you don't have, you know, you don't have the monetary funds to be out socializing all the time. You know, so are your relationships or your friendships lacking, things like that. Just kind of that interaction between the two.
Yeah, that's, I think, the part that I found, you know, extremely interesting, because it was almost like pulling away a little bit. It had this sense of, you know, like almost like you were distancing yourself because of the way the disease itself kind of takes hold of your life to some degree, you know, physically. And then that, of course, interjects with how you're going to deal with it emotionally. You know, it's just this like constant vicious circle. So if I can't work, I can't make the money to go be social with my friends, then my friends sometimes become more distant because I'm not getting out as much. Or maybe there's also essences of they can't deal with what you have.
Yes, absolutely. And it's kind of like, if you think about it in almost like a Venn diagram, right? So you've got kind of your physical experience, how it overlays with, you know, your psychological experience. So how you think about, how you think and feel, and then that environmental piece, right? And they all come together for this kind of confluence of, you know, that center part, and they're all overlapping. And say, for instance, if you're in a lot of pain, you know, pain can cause you to have to stay in, not socialize. You know, it can cause your mind, if you're feeling a lot of pain, you can be, you know, it hurts, you don't feel like doing anything, mm-hmm. you get in that cycle. And so it almost, you can think about it right in that Venn diagram kind of way, but also as this kind of like cycle, almost like a disability overlay cycle on that also. So, you know, the less you do, the less you want to do. And the less you see friends, the less you want to see friends. Mm-hmm. We become comfortable just sitting on our couches, you know, watching Netflix or, you know, and yep. however, and then we're not exercising as much. And then our body rebels when we go out and try to. So,
so how do you, how do you stop that cycle? And I know that in this current state, you know, doing less is become somewhat normal over this last year of 2020, trying to be maybe more distant or, you know, don't want to expose ourselves to COVID. And I understand all of that, but I firmly believe that there'll be at some point an end to it, and that these troubles of distancing and getting away from people, sometimes either by accident or on purpose, because of the reasons you mentioned, even before COVID-19, still existed. So how do you stop the cycle or those things from happening? Is it multiple steps? Is there just, you know, there's no way there can be one quick, easy fix. I'm sure this takes, right, a change of life pattern or something.
Right. Yes, but you're absolutely right. Like, there's no one easy, quick fix. It certainly takes or can take mm-hmm. multiple steps. And, you know, it's kind of, a lot of times it can look like two steps forward, one step back, two more forward, two back, you know, mm-hmm. two forward, one back. So just, you know, having an expectation that things won't change overnight, I think is, it's huge. You know, there's certain things that are important to just how we're managing our day-to-day activities of daily living, right? And so ways that we can, you know, set ourselves up with an intervention, if you will, just to be on a path towards success, is kind of looking at those things that impact daily living. So sleep, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. adults should be getting 8 to 10 hours of sleep, or sorry, 7 to 9 hours of sleep for adults. Kids should be getting at least 8 to 10 hours of sleep, right? So if that's a sleep goal and you're not meeting that sleep goal, you know, thinking about how can I address that? You know, am I staying up all night because I'm doom scrolling on my on my phone, or I'm on social media, or I'm watching TV, or am I having trouble falling asleep because I'm just worried about stuff? Right. So if those are some of the things that are impacting sleep, or am I waking up in the middle of the night because I'm in pain and then I can't go back to sleep? Right. So depending on what's affecting your sleep, first pinpointing, you know, what it is that's keeping you from getting that required amount. Right. Identifying that, then we can identify ways in which to address it. So if you're up on screens, well, you know, we can move our screens away from our bed. We can take the TV out of our room. We can, you know, tell ourselves like we're not going to, you know, we're going to set a bedtime and we're going to do relaxing things before mm-hmm. bed, like warm showers, meditation, maybe listening to music or something that's more relaxing and right. not engaging our minds in the same way. Things that help us relax and fall asleep. Some people like to exercise before bed. Others like to just read a book. But, we do know that being on screens, we're recommending that you should come off screens at least an hour before you plan on going to bed, because that blue light keeps your mind activated. Hmm. So what we want to do is not trigger our mind that it's time to be awake. We want to trigger our mind that, oh, wait, it's time to relax. So that's one of the things that we can do. And that also can be applied if, say, you're in pain and you're waking up often in the middle of the night. So if you're doing all those prophylactic things like, you know, taking an anti-inflammatory pain medication to help, you know, just to help cut down the pain, we can do things like hot water bottles on that area, heat or ice packs, and then meditation, or guided meditation, relaxation exercises, or even something as easy as just, counting your breath. So taking a breath in for 8 seconds, holding for 4, breathing out for 8, right? And that rhythmic breathing to help your mind slow down and focus. And then, you know, it helps your body relax. Those are ways that we can address our sleep. And sleep impacts the activities of daily living. Nutrition is another, is something else that impacts our daily living. So, you know, how well we're functioning day to day. Can we do our jobs at home? Can we do chores? Can we help our children, with homework and things like that? Or are we so exhausted after work, that we can't do any of that? So, you know, having balanced meals, snacks, a daily nutrition goal, some people already do this. Some people have to work with dietitians to do this. Others just recognize like, oh, it's the holidays and I really love all the cookies that are coming in the door, but and who doesn't? Right. But maybe I shouldn't eat 5 of them, right before bedtime. Something like that. They taste good, but so, you know, another thing that really impacts activities of daily living is hydration. Mm. So, and that's something that it's so easy to do and something we don't think about often. So how hydrated are we, right? We should be drinking 60 to 80 ounces of water a day. And that's without exercise. So if we're exercising, it should be more water than that. And typically we don't do that. You know, you don't wake up, drink a bunch of water and move throughout our day. And so sometimes, perhaps we have headaches or we're just feeling sluggish. You know, and that's one of the simplest things you can do. Like, oh, how much water did I drink today? You know, am I on track to, you know, help my body feel better? You know, it helps us with alertness and everything else. So hydration, I think that's an easy one, and it's an easy one to forget. So if you keep a water bottle with you, you're more likely to just drink water compared to if you have to remind yourself to get up and get something all the time. So if it's there and it's in front of you, it's like the best reminder ever. Getting out and doing some sort of physical activity that addresses whatever your ability level is really important. And so, you know, if that means walking up and down your driveway for 30 minutes, or, you know, playing Dance Revolution on the, you know, on your child's Nintendo, yeah, or, you know, whatever that activity looks like, but something, you know, something for at least 30 minutes a day can really help us feel just mentally fit, and as well as, you know, it can certainly contribute to our physical well-being. And then again, that physical well-being can contribute to our mental well-being. And then we also, you and I had touched on this a little bit earlier, talking about socialization. So, you know, what does socialization look like? And right now during COVID, it looks very different. But what we found that we're like super flexible in finding ways to interact with our family who live across the country and our coworkers. And so, you know, I know we all now know how to Zoom really well.
Right.
And it's not ideal, and it's not a replacement for, you know, sitting in a room with somebody or hugging somebody, but it's the best thing that we've got at the moment. And I want to say it's more helpful than not doing something at all. Socially, I think it's important to try and set up two positive social interactions a day, and those can look really different for different people. It could be, you know, having an interaction with somebody at a grocery store or at a store if you're out and about. It could be, you know, doing something at your child's school. It could be calling a parent, just checking in, saying hello. And or it could be, you know, reaching out to a friend that you haven't seen or talked to for a long time. So, you know, setting up a distanced coffee or something, as we're used to doing these days. So, you know, those are important factors that impact our daily living, which impact our mental well-being, because again, that's all interrelated. And what the one thing I do think is important is, you know, this idea of pacing. So it's all fine and easy to say, oh yeah, I should do that. And then we set this goal of, you know, today I've done no exercise and I've done nothing for the last, you know, 90 days, but tomorrow I'm going to get my 30 minutes in, and I'm going to do 30 minutes every day for the next month. And, you know, the chances of being successful at doing it that way are really low. And so, you know, if we can think about pacing into activities, saying, you know what, I'm going to start with 5 minutes. And I think I can do 5 minutes. I can be really successful at it. And if I feel like going further after 5 minutes, I'll do that. But I'm setting my goal for 5 minutes. And maybe I'll do that 5 minutes today, 5 minutes tomorrow, and then 2 days from now I'll double that to 10 minutes, and so, and then 2 days from then I'll you know, bring it up to 15 or 20 minutes depending on how I feel that I'm doing or how I think I'm doing, and that way I give myself an opportunity to practice it and to practice and be successful.
So don't set the expectations too high. Keep them realistic, at least when you're starting out. But then do you want to, you know, if you can handle the first expectation or goal you set for yourself using your example of, well, if you can exercise for 5 minutes, then how do we slowly maybe build up to that 30?
So I think, you know, I think maybe making yourself a schedule, right? And say the first 3 days, I'm going to start with 5 minutes. If I can do more, that's great. But my goal is only 5 minutes. So when I get to my 5 minutes, I'm already a success, right? And then 3 days of that. And then, you know, then I'm ready. The fourth day, my goal is 10 minutes. And, you know, I'm going to practice that. And maybe I don't reach 10 minutes on that first or second day, and that's okay. You know, so ask yourself, was 10 minutes too big of a goal? Was it too big of a leap? Or, you know, what did something get in the way? You know, we've always got stuff getting in the way. Is it a truly realistic goal, right? Or did I just not reach the 10 minutes because when I was in the middle of it, you know, my neighbor came over and I got sidetracked and didn't get back to it. And, you know, my packages weren't delivered. So then I had to deal with that, right? It could be something like that. And you say, well, I didn't really give myself a chance to be successful because these things interfered. So I'm going to start again on day 10, right? And so that idea of being flexible enough to recognize, is it a realistic goal? And if it is, great, I'm going to keep going. And if it's not, let's reassess. Maybe I need 7 minutes. Maybe I need to take smaller jumps and practice that for more days until I feel like, yeah, I can add 2 more minutes. You know, I'm ready for that.
We're talking.
So that's the idea of pacing.
We're talking about mental health, mental fitness with Missy Dixon. And I think that's really what you're giving us there, right? You're giving us that kind of a platform. If you wanted to, I have a feeling you'd probably title that what mental fitness is, right? The things that you're talking about.
Yes, absolutely.
And
I do. I think that, ahead.
No, I don't want you to stop that thought. That sounded good. Keep going.
No, I was just saying, I mean, that's kind of like a tool for how to get there, but we've been talking about, you know, what contributes to your mental fitness. And, you know, that social piece, the socialization or our relationships contribute, how we communicate with each other and with ourselves, is a piece of mental fitness. You know, being realistic with our plans, and using those different strategies like pacing and, you know, setting realistic expectations. That's part of mental fitness. Addressing kind of our own internal feelings is also part of being a mentally fit person. And then just adapting our physical environment and focusing on those aspects that affect our activities of daily living that I had talked about, so sleep and nutrition and hydration and exercise and being social, also play a role in being mentally fit.
It's definitely some work to do, but it's going to go to a positive outcome if we, you know, I say it's not, that's why I don't like the term diet. I'm on a diet, because when the diet's over, you go back to what you did. So it's really, you have to shift your lifestyle. I don't think that these things you mentioned are difficult tasks. I think that they're simple, and I think we have to keep, you know, that goal of, well, do you want to feel a little better? And there's maybe like another question of expectation. You know, so we live in this, in my opinion, this society, we want quick fixes and we want to feel better now, and this stinks, and let's get to the other side of it so it's better. And I understand that that can happen sometimes, but not all the time. So when you talk about setting expectations of goals to achieve feeling better, then I assume then we have to also set an expectation of how quickly we're going to feel better.
True. I mean, I think, you know, if you set an expectation, as long as it's a realistic expectation, but also you know, what may work for you, Tim, may be a different timeline or time frame than what would work for me. And so really, you know, there's no cookie cutter way to say this is, you know, you should be feeling better in 4 days or 10 days. You know, you should be feeling better when you should be feeling better, and just kind of noticing those things along the way. Like what is realistic?
Yeah.
And this ability to adapt and cope and reassess, reassess in a realistic way and say, okay, you know, I'm used to things going really well and getting everything done quickly, but oh wait, it's COVID and I'm at home and I'm working from home and I have children. And so now what's realistic looks very different than what it looked like 9 months ago or 6 months ago, right? So kind of being able to shift in focus or adapt our focus to what is in the here and now can be very helpful. Okay. And I think a key component to this is part of mindfulness. And I know you've talked about mindfulness with some of your previous guests. A absolute key takeaway from mindfulness is, you know, yes, notice the here and now, but do it without judgment. And I think the same idea applies to when we're pacing and we're adapting and we're changing. This idea that we can do this without judgment, which is, you know, it's an adaption, it's a pivot, right? Mm-hmm. We pivot to here, we pivot to there, and we just do it without that internal judgment. Mm-hmm. And that's going to help us be much more successful with that pivot if we're not constantly, you know, harshly judging ourselves for how slow we're going or how fast we're going.
Yeah. Well, that definitely makes sense. And I think that is key, right? Not saying it expectations too high. Now we had a question here on Facebook that might kind of, I think it kind of keys in what we're talking about, but the question's slightly vague. So Cindy on Facebook asks, what about profoundly disabled FSHD patients? Now that's what I mean by the generality, you know, of the question as in the, what about part. So profoundly, I'm assuming that, you know, Cindy's kind of saying those that are maybe more physically affected. So it's tougher, more difficult to do the physical work, or, you know, half hour might seem impossible, could be impossible, you know? So what is maybe the adapt exercise or the pivot for someone that is more profoundly disabled? I hope I helped ask that question for you, Cindy, but you know, I'll let you take the wheel now.
Sure. So I think, you know, if we're talking about exercise, which really isn't my speciality, right? But you know, is there some sort of adaptation that can be applied to help somebody who's profoundly physically disabled by FSHD? Or, you know, can we just reinvent what it actually looks like? So, you know, if we're talking about somebody who's using adaptive equipment, right? Mm-hmm. So a scooter or something, you know, sometimes just getting in and out of the scooter would count, right? Like they're exercising to get in and out of the scooter. And can you take your scooter, you know, for a 20-minute cruise around the block with, you know, with a family member or on your own? Getting, you know, does exercise look different? Does it, you know, what does it mean? Does it mean going outside? Does it mean you know, transferring within the house? Can it be swimming? You know, what I think we have to think about it in just in different ways, right? So exercise for somebody who is profoundly physically disabled looks different than somebody who's able-bodied. And so, you know, what does constitute exercise?
Right.
And that's individual, you know, that's an individual preference.
And I think that goes back to the expectation level. I mean, obviously I'm not profoundly affected, you know, by FSHD as you know, Cindy's mentioning, she's added on as we've been talking that, you know, her son can't, she mentions, can't use his hands or lift, you know, it's tough to get out of the house or go visit people or a restaurant even is massively difficult. So obviously you can see, you know, changing the environment or getting out of the current environment mm-hmm. to maybe uplift the spirits is going to be more difficult. So Cindy's offered a little more information, you know, for us in that regard. So, you know, since we're talking about Cindy and her son, I'm not sure, you know, if you can get more exacting for her interest of, you know, of what we're talking about, because it is tough. I can understand all that.
And I think, you know, like tapping into the things that her son enjoys, right? So I don't know how old Cindy's son is, if mm-hmm. he's an adult or if he right. is, you know, a younger person. Mm-hmm. But, you know, are there certain things that he enjoys? It's hard to use his hands. Mm-hmm. You know, is he using adaptive devices to play video games or listening to music
right.
or, you know, so does it, you know, can he dance using his scooter? That may look very different than somebody who is ambulatory. You know, but what is, you know, what is something that he can do at his ability level? I think that's important. Does it mean, you know, taking a short walk with the dog around the block, or, you know, riding in your power chair around the block mm-hmm. with the dog? You know, all of these different things can constitute exercise, can constitute for socialization or social right. opportunities, or, you know, can help with relationship building, conversation and communication. I think sometimes it just comes back to, like, you know, trying new things, asking, you know, Cindy asking her son, what does he like to do? I'm sure she already knows, you know, and kind of thinking outside of the box, right? How does it look different?
Right.
You know, does he like to play music, but he it's hard for him to use his hands, you know, to play a guitar anymore. Can he still strum? Can he, you know, can we find some sort of adaptive tool or a different instrument? Or, you know, is it easier to hold drumsticks and beat the drum compared to some of that fine motor movement that you might need for piano playing or stringed instrument?
Right. No, like yeah. And I think you're keying in, right? I mean, the expectation level has to be unique to the person. What can you constitute exercise, social engagement? And to me, do what you can and try to, man, it's tough. It's tough to adapt because this disease affects us also differently. So even for me mm-hmm. to offer advice for someone like Cindy's son, you know, is difficult because I can't completely relate, but I can kind of relate. And just for yourself as well, like, you deal with a lot of people and help a lot of people of all different various degrees, right, of neurological chronic, you know, disorders that we've been talking about. So it is tough to get specific, and I definitely appreciate you, you know, giving the pointers or ideas, not just for Cindy, but for anybody else that's kind of listening, and maybe there is an aha moment in there going, wait a minute. Yeah, I probably could constitute right. that as like a social outing. I do walk the dog, and maybe I might run into a neighbor or something like that. So at least you're getting
right.
out.
Or invite somebody step. With you.
Right.
Or, you know.
Right. Yeah. Right. Make it like a walk outing.
I mean, I think one of the things is, like, you know, one of these tools that we use in therapy is either pleasant event scheduling is one of the things. So literally scheduling events that are pleasant for you. And then we also use like visualization a lot. So visualizing ourselves doing something, being in our happy place. So, you know, what is our happy place? For some people, it's up in the mountains camping and just hearing the breeze through the, you know, rustling through the pine trees and smelling bacon on the grill and all of these things. And for other people, it's sitting right in a library and just having the quiet. And so I think, you know, when we're talking about thinking outside of the box and what would, you know, how we can affect a change if that's our goal, for somebody who has a disability, such as FSHD, saying, hey, what is your happy place, right? Like, if you had to pick it, what's your happy place? And how can we adapt to get you there, to get you to that happy place, right? So is it playing video games with friends? Is it, I have a, this young man that I worked with quite a bit, who has Duchenne muscular dystrophy, and his happy place is just being outside doing adventurous things. And so his mother is like no other, helping to think outside of the box. So he's now 20, and maybe 4 years ago, he said, one of the things I really want to do is go down into the Grand Canyon. Okay. And she, you know, she made this happen for him. And so he had this, you know, she was thinking outside of the box. It constitutes like getting into his happy place, being outside in nature. And he had this whole volunteer group come together that eventually they took him down into the canyon. He camped. He's completely non-ambulatory. So they had a special kind of chair sled. Wow. Thing that they could bring him down and back up, and it was amazing. So I often think about that family, right? Like he put out something there that was like in his wildest dreams, and mom made it happen. And it doesn't have to be that big and elaborate. It literally can be, you know, I want to be able to, you know, sit outside and, you know, we live near the mountain. So that's why I keep using that reference. But, you know, go have a picnic in the mountains and, you know, things like that. It, on first thought, might think, ooh, logistically, that might be a little difficult. But I think that there are ways that we can adapt, and maybe you can't get all the way up the mountain, but maybe you can get to a park that has a hill that there's this nice pine tree there and it kind of looks that way. And so, you know, kind of focusing on those pieces in the here and now and what you can do to have an effect on the here and now to make it work.
That's good. Yeah.
So being flexible is key, you know, being flexible with ourselves is really important.
The last question I wanted to direct at you is because I don't want this part of our community, and I think Cindy asking questions on behalf of her son is a great segue into this, is our caregivers. I mean, for the FSHD Society, they started part of our volunteer group has started something called the Sharegiver Caregiver Hour. So once a month they'll meet, the caregivers do, and talk via Zoom and connect, you know, from wherever they are and share their experiences, whatever it may be. I was invited to sit on one last month, which was I was honored because I'm not a caregiver. So to be on the other side of it was very nice to see that perspective and to understand it more. So my question relates to that group and relates to Cindy is, what is some of the best ways for mental fitness? Is it the same but just different for caregivers?
Oh, that's a great question, Tim. I think there's so much that is the same, right? That can be applied to caregivers, and I think you know, just kind of being being flexible in how you're looking after yourself. So can be very helpful. So if you think about it, when I first became a new mother, somebody said, you have to take time for yourself or you won't be a good mother, right? And that's so counterintuitive to how we see ourselves.
Right.
And I think that applies to caregivers, right? It's counterintuitive. You're giving your everything, you're giving your all, but in order to be the best caregiver that you can be and that you want to be, you have to take time for yourself to give yourself a mental refresh, so that you can jump back in and devote, you know, all of your energy into being the best caregiver. Mm. And sometimes there's no break. And I get that, right? So maybe you're a single caregiver and you don't have somebody coming in to relieve you. And so it feels like you've got to be on 24/7,
right?
Because you've got to be on 24/7. And so again, you know, how can you work in some self-care when you never really have, you know, a solid chunk of time to have a break? And so what does that look like? It could look like, you know, taking a shower for 5 minutes longer. It could look like, you know, putting on music and just closing your eyes. It could look like, you know, sitting in a dark space for, you know, 20 minutes on the back porch, right? While you just give yourself a refresh. Or, you know, it could be doing crossword puzzles or watching a television show, you know, something that you enjoy doing. You know, how can you find time for yourself? And I think one of the strongest messages that I can give is that when you're taking time for yourself, it doesn't mean that you're being selfish. It means that you're taking the time to replenish and restore what you have to give and offer, and that makes you a better caregiver. So again, you know, the same things that we talked about earlier, like sleep and nutrition and hydration and, you know, activity level and socialization, those all play into being mentally fit, and they all apply to caregivers as well. And if you have the luxury of taking more than 5 minutes, or, you know, getting an hour, or getting a weekend, you know, a boys trip or a girls trip weekend, just to give yourself a reset, or going to yoga class, or, you know, sometimes it's going to the grocery store, and, yeah, you know, right. And that's okay. It's a mental break from your day-to-day caregiving activities and worry, right? Because I think as caregivers, we have a sense of worry. Like we have to, you know, we have to do our best. We have to keep our loved ones healthy and going. And so that's a big responsibility that we take on. And also, I think giving yourself just an opportunity to reset, but also to say, like, I'm not perfect. I'm doing the best I can in the moment right now. And this is the best of me right now. And that's okay. And, you know, recognizing sometimes we have better days than others. Yeah. And that's okay. You can do it differently the next day.
Well, thanks, Missy, for joining us today, talking to us about mental health. And what I love is that term, mental fitness. We talk, you know, it's kind of merging the two worlds of physical fitness, mental health, mental fitness. I love it. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. It's been a real pleasure. I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. And we'll probably have you on again. So don't be afraid if you see me email you again.
No, I'd love that. Sounds awesome. Great. There's so much to talk about.
Absolutely. So, I think we just scratched the surface. Yeah, absolutely.
I think so. I think I have one final thing that I just like to say, because I think it applies to everyone. It's important that we just focus on what we can, what we can control in the here and now, and not worry about what's out in the future because we can't control that, and not worry about what happened in the past because we can't control that. So, just the focus on the immediate, and it will help us be more mentally fit people.
Fantastic. Great advice. Nice final words to finish there, Missy. Thank you again very much.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Tim. Thanks, everyone.
So that is Missy Dixon, a psychologist, University of Utah. She's worked in this field for 25 years. So there's a lot of wisdom there. And that's, when I listen to places, to where I need to get educated on things that I don't know either a lot about or I want to know more about, I'm not trying to package it all up and learn every single thing. I'm looking for nuggets. I'm looking for things that I can pick up on and things that I can take and use and remember and think to myself, that's reasonable. I can do that. That's reasonable to understand or to use. And in my coaching world, when I steal drills or things like that, when I coach baseball, I say, well, I stole this or I stole that. So I kind of do that. But it's the same idea. It's the same principle of, can you take something and use it? And when I saw Missy Dixon speak, you can search her on YouTube, and she did she was on a panel, and she did a segment on mental health, and it was very, very well done. And she talked about some of these things there as well, psychosocial and mental fitness. And it really keys in. She really understands our community and on the needs that we have as mental illness or mental health, and keeping those things in line. Because I think, depression and having mental illness issues kind of walks hand in hand with these things. I'm not a stranger to that. So I get it. And I really appreciate what Cindy brought up. She commented several times and really put it out there. And I really appreciate Cindy's trust in our community for her to say something and talk about it and offer up these things to direct our thought of our conversation and pinpoint it a little bit to her son. And I did see, Cindy, that you mentioned that in your comments. Your son's 46, used to fly planes. Now he works with drones. He was an architect. These are things, you're right, that I'm sure your son feels like are taken away. You mentioned he feels like a failure in the comments. That hurts me. It hurts me that someone out there is feeling that way, and I know he's not the only one. And maybe that is a little nugget for him or for you to know you're not alone, but I know it feels like it. And, I studied architecture for a little while too. I was not an architect, so, but I loved the art of it. And I could probably still do it, but there's other things I can't. And I mourn the things I can't do or do even as well, or hopes I thought I could continue to do, but realizing the reality is that's not going to be that's not going to be the case. For me, the part is the letting it go and then moving forward with something else. Because the moment I feel like I'm going to let it go, like, okay, I can't do that, or it won't be like I thought, I feel like I'm now defeated. So now that defeat turns into failure. They just walk, once again, hand in hand. It's hard to not have one feeling with the other. But it's something you have to, I'm not a psychologist, but I do like the terms of something you have to process through, something you have to acknowledge, something you have to say, yes, that's there, that makes me feel like crap, or I'm disappointed, or this. And then now what? And now what? And for me, coaching has really taught me to help my players deal with failure. But honestly, it's helping me deal with failure. That's why I listen to coaches, because they're not just coaching a game. They're coaching the mind. They're coaching the athlete. They're coaching people to adapt and to succeed with the skills they have. That's what those things I'm taking from, and I use them in my own life. So what can I do now to be successful? even if success means I can walk the steps better than I did yesterday by a little bit, that's success. So it's back to that expectation point that Missy was giving. And this is something that I say a lot to my players, and I challenge them, and I ask them the question, how much better do you want to be today? When we're done training, what do you want? And you know what the biggest answer is? I'm sure you're all saying it possibly now, 100%. I want to be 100%. I want 100%. I'm going to give 100%. I want it back. Not true. Just fight for 1%. Just get a little bit. A little bit. Can you wake up, complete your day, and say, did I get 1% better in something? Learn something new. Adapt better. Better positive attitude. Something like that. Some facet. Can I say I got a little better? You know, for me, you know, did I not get so frustrated so quickly today on things I knew were a challenge? Did I get better? If not, now I know what to work on. So my failure becomes learning instead of losing. So it's all in that. It's easy to talk and it's hard to walk the walk. I get it. I mean that figuratively, of course, that it is difficult to walk that path day in, day out, not feeling like it's wearing you down. But it's okay to have days you just don't. You just don't want it. You don't want to do it. You just don't want to do it. I don't want to feel good right now. And that's okay. But at some point, you're going to have to get out of it, or it becomes habit and it's the lifestyle you don't want. So to me, that's, you know, that's it. Darlene Dimitri, thanks for commenting, says, always learning how to focus on the things I can do. Always learning how. That's the key. Always learning how to focus on the things I can do. Always learning. Are you a constant, lifelong learner? Looking for things that you can do. I don't know what the answer is for Cindy's son. All I know is that I'm 45 years old. I'm right in there. I don't have the disease progression as he does, it seems. So it's tough for me to relate that way and then preach something that people might respond to me, well, it's easier for you, or it's easier for you. You're right, it is. Mm-hmm. I can't change that. But maybe I can offer you something that might help you see what you can do. Like Darlene says, what can you do? Can you read? Can you listen to audiobooks and help you learn certain things? Can you speak still? You know, has FSHD affected the way you speak? Maybe you can speak to people and help them be better. I would find massive, massive feedback and positivity from that if I could do public speaking or something and speak, you know, to groups. I know I do this podcast, but it's different atmosphere. That would be great. That's something I would love to do down my life when I can't do the physical things so much. So, you know, pivot, adjust, think. I know we're going over and I digress. I wanted to hit really quickly before we close up shop that we do have a show next week. Talk about the physical side. So Missy, if you want to come on, or Cindy, excuse me, if you want to come on back next week, we're going to talk to Bill and Mitch. And yes, there's going to be things they're going to talk about that even possibly you can adapt even with what your son is taking on. And I understand that seems like a mountain to climb. So we're going to have the physical side of FSHD. Tomorrow, 12:10, FSHD webinar. It is Doctors Jinwa Dumyati, I hope I got that right, and Dr. Robbie Tawil, who we know very well. He was on our radio show. They're both from the University of Rochester, I believe, and they are going to update us on the COVID-19 pandemic. How ironic when the FDA is going to come out with their report, final, you know, releasing of any type of vaccine tomorrow. So that's interesting. So join us for that. It's 3 p.m. East, 2 p.m. Central. On the 12th, we have the Southeast Region regional virtual year-end party. That includes the Atlanta, South Carolina, Southwest Florida, and Tampa chapters meeting at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. From 2 to 3 p.m. Central, it's the Central Texas chapter meeting. Maybe it's a party. I'm not sure. Oh, I think it's a launch. It might be a launch with Mark Stone and Beth Johnston and Dr. Jaya Trivedi from University of Texas Southwest in Dallas. They're going to be all there. Wow, that sounds exciting. 2 to 3 p.m. Central Time. On the 14th, 5 to 6 p.m., the Wellness Hour, and that time is Eastern. It's the monthly Zoom meeting. You can register at fshdsociety.org for that meeting. and that's on the 14th. I believe the caregiver sharegiver hour is on the 29th of December. The reason why I bring that up is because we talked about it during this show. That might be something, Cindy, you might find helpful and interesting to use for yourself. Can you devote an hour and chat and be with people that I think you can really help you? Don't forget you. I know you don't forget your son. You love your son. You're there for him. I know that. I feel that even through this Facebook platform. But sometimes you need a little time for you. It's okay. Don't feel guilty. And I hope you can join that group. That might be a nice avenue, a nice place to go, unless you found it in previous gatherings. That'd be great too. So this was a lot of fun. I enjoy talking about this side of the disease, the mental health, and the things that we learned today was, you know, mental fitness, working on ourselves, get your sleep, get your nutrition, be hydrated, especially with neuromuscular diseases. We actually dehydrate faster. I don't know if everybody knew that. So make sure you're always drinking that water, 60 to 80 ounces. Seems hard to achieve. I think you can do that. It's not that impossible. Next week, like I said, we talk about physical side. Join us this time next week, same time, at the FSHD Society Radio Show. Until then, be well, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and we'll see you next week here. Thanks for joining us, and thank you to our guest. Our special guest tonight was Missy Dixon. If you missed the entirety of this show, don't worry. We'll post it yet tonight anywhere you find podcasts. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week. You've been listening to the FSHD Society Radio Show.